Get ready to jump off sides. We're going to get you with the hard count.
Let's go again!
Here's your host.
Get the gum out of your ears and listen up.
Aaron Nagler.
Don't shut me up!
And Andrew Garda.
I'm friggin' velvety smooth.
And here we go.
Here we go again. Another week in the books. Another hard count. I'm Andrew Garda. It is late Tuesday night. And I'm finally sitting down to do the podcast. Tonight, we're going to talk about the no-hitting practices and whether they're hurting tackling, whether they're causing more injuries than they're preventing. And of course, since we're on the subject of injuries, we're going to talk about injuries and the guys who hit the injured reserve today. And on top of that, we're going to talk a little Terrell Owens because T.O. is back, baby, but nobody cares. We're going to do that. We're going to talk about my picks for this week. This is the Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. I hope you guys are doing well. It's been an exciting few weeks of football and a crazy weekend this past weekend. I mean, just nuts. If you don't read from the press box, my Monday night, Tuesday morning column at CheeseheadTV.com, where this fine podcast is hosted, by the way. If you didn't read it, then you missed my call for a mercy rule for the NFL because Tennessee, the Colts, the Raiders, there were some beatings this weekend, and it didn't go well. It didn't go well for any of those teams, and I don't foresee anyone forgetting the 67-7 drubbing that the Saints put down on the Colts. Even the horrific Jaguars-Baltimore Ravens game on Monday night couldn't get the taste of that debacle Sunday night out of my mouth. And I know a lot of people running around Monday night, Tuesday morning, going, well, defensive battle, guys. Defense wins championships. Now, that was an inept offense in terms of the Raiders. The Jaguars are starting to look all right. I mean, I don't think they're going to be winning the Super Bowl this year. I don't know that they'll even make the playoffs. I take that back. I know they won't make the playoffs. But aside from all of that, I think Blaine Gabbert's coming along pretty well. I think if you got some decent wide receivers there, and I love Mike Thomas, he's a slot guy. He is not a guy that you throw out there as your primary wide receiver. And they don't seem to have any sort of option that isn't Mike Thomas. We're bringing back oldie but goodie Mike Sims-Walker, who flamed out in St. Louis for crying out loud. That's who you want to bring in, the guy who couldn't make it in St. Louis? All right, then. And Jason Hill, he's doing well now, but I don't think that's going to last. The Jaguars really worked hard to try and bring in Brandon Lloyd, who ended up with the Rams. Couldn't quite pull the trigger, didn't want to give the escalators to the Broncos that the Broncos wanted. I believe it was like a 30-catch plateau, and then the pick moved from a 6th to a 5th or something like that. And as it turns out, kids, in one game, Brandon Lloyd is already on his way to beating that. But I think Lloyd would have given Blaine Gabbert and that offense a better weapon than what they have right now. Mercedes Lewis was playing horribly. Not horribly, but nowhere near as good as he was last year when his contract was in doubt. Some guys will play hard for that contract and that's it. Some guys will play hard no matter what. And it seems like Mercedes Lewis is a guy who is going to just play for his contract. It's unfortunate. But the Jaguars, you know, I think that offense is coming along okay. They shouldn't have, you know, they didn't even have that much defense. They didn't have that much success against the Ravens defense. I mean, you can't really blame the Ravens defense for the ineptitude of the offense. And how does Ray Rice not run the ball 20 or 30 times against the Jaguars? I mean, you're having problems throwing a ball. I don't know why. But you do. So have Ray Rice run the ball. He's only one of the best backs in the league. I mean, or at least hit him a lot more with the screen pass. Get him the ball in space. Have him go. You know, do that thing he does. make people miss. Turn on the speed. Be everything Chris Johnson can't seem to be right now. But that was some Ravens ineptitude right there. You know, and it was a weekend for inept offenses, as well as a weekend for some great offenses. But you had the Colts continue to just be horrific on offense. Curtis Painter's okay, but he's not great. The rest of that offense doesn't seem to be doing much. Carter and Adai do all right running the ball, but Dallas Clark's a non-factor. Wayne, Collie, Garcon, none of them really amount to much of anything. You look at the Titans, Chris Johnson is a disaster. And I talked a little bit about this in from the press box. But you're looking at a situation where a guy who I warned people, you know, you guys know I do the football guys writing, and I believe I was pretty clear, and I even hedged my rankings a little bit. But I was pretty clear that I thought Chris Johnson was going to have a rough season. As many players who hold out either end up A, hurt, or B, just having a lackluster season. And he's having a lackluster season. I mean, he may be hurt, but I don't know. And it was worse, and looked like it had the potential to be worse, because not only does he miss the preseason and training camp, but there's no offseason. So, Chris Johnson really, I mean, a lot of these players left on their own recognizance. Some guys, they're in great shape. You know, you're never, I think, in as good a shape. People weren't as prepared. But you just aren't in the shape you would have been had you been through OTAs and minis and training camp. And I think Chris Johnson, like, he was like, oh, I'm still playing in the football shape. He's had one game over 100 yards. He has one touchdown. I mean, he's just not doing well. And that's the hangover. That's the hangover from missing the holdout, or the missing training camp because of his holdout, and a hangover because of the offseason. So there's, you know, a huge problem for him. But getting back to the beatdowns this weekend, you got the Titans who had problems, and the Raiders, the wheels didn't just come off, the car bottomed out, and there were sparks and maybe an explosion. I mean, Kyle Baller, now you know why they went after Carson Palmer. I mean, here's a guy who is just not all that special. Baller is just not that great. I'd have to say decidedly average at best. Maybe less so. Carson Palmer, he wasn't ready to come in, and he has no timing with his receivers. I'll give him a pass for this particular game. 6 interceptions. That's awful. The Raiders just did not play well. I mean, the AFC West is probably one of the rougher conferences, or divisions rather, in the NFL. Not to say that they beat each other up a lot, but they're just an inconsistent bunch. But so there was a tremendous amount of blowouts this weekend. And I've had a few people, and I touched on this in the column too. I've had a few people who have been like, you know, AG, should a team, should people be giving the Saints crap because they scored 67 points on the Colts? Like, is there a point where you're just running up the score? I said, first of all, if you think that they intentionally ran up the score, then you weren't watching the game. I mean, this is a team that started to try and do ball control offense, grind the clock out. They were done. How inept are the Colts? Inept enough to where simple trap plays, like by Darren Sproles, end up in huge yards and touchdowns. And then Painter threw a pick six. Like, you can't have the Saints play halfway. When you play halfway, you get hurt. Ask any pro. Ask any athlete. If you play halfway, you're going to end up hurting yourself. But further, like, even if they were trying, I remember Belichick and the Pats got a lot of crap for running up the score, and the Pats did, in that particular case a couple years ago, leave their starters in for 4 quarters. Which I thought was not only unnecessary, but sort of stupid, because you run the risk of hurting one of your starters in a game that's already out of control. That said, if you don't want them to score on you, stop them. Your job as an NFL defense is to stop the offense. If you can't do that, too bad. You know, when you're not able to stop an offense that is just trying to grind the clock out because the game's over, too bad. You don't like it? Stop them. That's your job. And it's not even like college. You know, when teams will intentionally run the score up because you get style points with the BCS. So remind me to go into that little mess in the offseason so we can have that conversation. But you're looking at a situation where it doesn't matter how much. I mean, it does. If you needed a tiebreaker, it's nice to have the extra points. But by and large, no coach goes in going, I'd like to drop 70 on this team. I think today I would like to beat the Colts by 60 points. No coach is looking for that. And no coach, they know they don't have to worry about it. Probably the ugliest game, though. I mean, Baltimore-Jacksonville was bad. I've only at this point seen bits and pieces of Denver-Miami. But holy crap. And let's talk a little bit about the Denver Broncos. And we'll talk a little bit about Miami, too. Let's start with Miami, actually, because we'll have Tebow time in a minute. How bad is Miami? I mean, this is not a well-run franchise. If you're a Miami fan, and I've said it on this show and I've said it elsewhere, if you're a Miami fan, my heart goes out to you. I mean, I grew up a Jets fan, so you know I don't like the Fins. But I do know suffering, and the Miami Dolphins are doing it. I had a couple of Jets fans tell me right before the Jets-Miami game, well, Miami's defense is pretty good. I think they're underrated. They're not. They're really not. They haven't been underrated, like, ever. Their corners are okay, no matter what they like to think. Their defense is all right, at best. You know, there's a defense that absolutely collapsed this weekend in the fourth quarter. And I'll tell you what. Like, the first three quarters was more about Tebow struggling than it was Miami doing well. So the defense is a mess. The offense is a mess. The offensive line has been an issue for several years. Nobody's doing anything. They got rid of two pretty effective running backs. And while I like Daniel Thomas, I don't see why they pick up Reggie Bush. Why not just keep Ronnie Brown or Ricky Williams or both? Bring in Daniel Thomas. You know you're going to cut one or both of those guys in the next year or two, so just bring Thomas along slow. Nope, didn't do that. So we have a rookie running back and a guy who never stays healthy and isn't a, you know, between the tackles guy. And Thomas has done all right, but Bush, he hasn't worked out really the way they want him to. He's not Darren Sproles, which was another guy they were after. Sproles would have made more sense. I think he's a little more dynamic than Bush. And yeah, I just said that. Who would have thought years later that Bush and Vince Young and Matt Leinart were all going to be pretty much non-factors in the NFL right now? That's kind of crazy, isn't it? But on top of it, like, the ownership is just bizarre. Steve Rush is just an odd duck. He's done nothing but flounder. Since he's taken over this franchise, he walks out into the public and says stupid things. This whole Tebow celebration, I'm sorry, I know it's a Florida Gator National Championship celebration, which, by the way, didn't sell out and not enough people showed up to. But it was really about getting people in because they knew Tebow was a draw and they're having problems selling tickets. That didn't work out. You know, you're... Home stadium is Miami, University of Miami's home stadium, and you're in Miami. Like, there are just so many things wrong with that. It's just so many missteps. The ridiculous Jim Harbaugh incident this past year, where they went after Harbaugh, and when they didn't get him, they had to come back to Sperano, the lame duck. In the same way that worked with quarterbacks, they were, you know, talking about trying to pick up various, you know, free agent quarterbacks, and then, oh, well, we're stuck with Henny now. We really like you, though. It was just a badly run franchise. Sperano's on death watch right now. After this past weekend, Sperano's got to be on death watch. And he's not an inspiring guy. Like, you listen to what he says post-game and everything, and you're just, like, I'm getting tired thinking about it. Now, he doesn't, it's not even like Mike McCarthy, Bill Belichick boring, where you can see the wheels turning. Sperano just, like, fumbles when he talks. And on top of everything else, he just doesn't seem to be a very good head coach. Like, Miami is just sort of dawdled around and fiddled around, and not even his, I was reading on Pro Football Talk, geez, Florio, send me a check already, but I'm reading on Pro Football Talk, and I was reading elsewhere as well, that they had the wrong packages on the last two plays when the Broncos tied up. The touchdown Tebow threw, they had the wrong package on, and Tebow's two-point conversion. Wrong package. Same package. They didn't have the big guys on the defensive line. They were worrying about, you know, covering. And on the touchdown pass, they had one guy by himself out there, and he got pulled. You know, maybe that was his mistake. Maybe that was a scheme issue. But it's just bad. I mean, you have defensive players throwing the defensive coordinator under the bus. That's just as much on Sperano. So Miami's a disaster. And I think I was reading, I think it was Matt Miller over at Bleacher Report had his ranking of all 32 teams. And a lot of people were like, how do you have Miami 32nd? How can it not be the Colts? They had 67 points scored on them. Because as bad as the Colts are, they weren't as bad as Miami in a lot of respects. Like, I'm just not impressed with Miami. And I, you know, I don't know that I would have them dead last, but 31-32, you could pretty much flip a coin. 67 points is an impressive loss. However, Tebow, I mean, three quarters of ineptitude, and then to have your defense fall apart like that at the end and let him win. I mean, not let him win, but to give up, it's insane. You know, and then your offense dies at the same time. And this is why, by the way, you know, the Saints keep pouring it on. You put your foot on your opponent's throat and you push. If you let that guy up, you just never know. You never know. How much is enough before somebody does really well? Now, I mean, you know, the Colts, you know that if it's not Manning, it's going to be harder for them to come back. But let's be honest, you just don't know. 67 points is an awful lot of insurance, but hey, that's insurance you pay for. But Miami let Tebow back in. And I haven't fully watched that game yet, and I will later, and it's entirely possible there will be some sort of article in it. But you had Tim Tebow there, not looking very good. It's a combination, from what I've seen so far, of play calling, which was ultra-conservative and very predictable, and Tebow. I mean, the fact is that he still has a long way to go to become a good NFL quarterback. I still retain my doubts on that issue. I don't feel as though he's got the ability to do it. But there's one thing he does, and I know it's trite, and I know it's annoying, and I know that Nagler is tired of hearing about Tim Tebow when Aaron Rodgers is having the season he had. He's still having. But Tebow wins games. Like, Kyle Orton does not bring them back from 15 points. Now, I think you can make a compelling argument that Kyle Orton in that offense probably isn't down 15 points to Miami. But I think, you know, you got to wait and see how Tebow does over the next 10 games. They'll know, I think, probably in half that time whether he's the future of that quarterback position. I don't know that he really is, but he's going to be exciting to watch. It's going to be an exciting few months. They see Detroit this weekend, and I got to tell you, you know, Detroit's not going to let Tebow hang around. They're not going to let the Broncos hang around. a two-game skid for the Lions right now. That team's ticked off. The only thing that could derail them could be Matt Stafford's injury. What? Matt Stafford was injured? No. That's not possible. By the way, you know, we had a conversation a few weeks ago. Actually, it might even have been longer ago. We were talking about the three quarterbacks that got drafted in that draft class. Stafford, Freeman, and Sanchez. And talking about how they rate. I actually think it was either first week of the season or preseason. But you look at it now, Stafford's hurt yet again. Stafford, the most pure talent of the three, but never healthy. Never. If he misses significant time again this year, and the Lions have to start getting worried. Freeman is completely backslid, is making poor decisions. He just doesn't look as good as he has in the past. Mark Sanchez kind of looking like, right now, the most solid of the group. I mean, he doesn't have the injury problems, and he's playing more consistently than Freeman. Which is saying a lot about what Freeman's been doing, because Sanchez hasn't been all that consistent. But I still hold that a good deal of that problem is Brian Schottenheimer's offense. And here, you know, again, if you go to the article today from the press box, I talk a little bit about who Tim Tebow reminds me of, and that is Mark Sanchez. Now, they're very different quarterbacks in terms of mechanics, experience, accuracy. But really, you know, the criticism of both of them and the praise is very similar. All Mark Sanchez does is, you know, put the team on his back and win when they need him to. All Tebow does is win football games. Both of them make exceedingly bad decisions early in games that occasionally put their team behind the eight ball. Both of them can really motivate their teams to stay in games where sometimes they shouldn't be. Both very different quarterbacks, but they have that in common. And, you know, Tebow had a good 10-15 minutes at the end of the game. Again, I want to take a deeper look at it. It'll be interesting to see how he does from here on out. He doesn't have the receivers. Brandon Lloyd not being there, I think, hurts. McGahee's hurt now, speaking of things being hurt. And we're going to talk a little injury a little later. And Noshon Moreno is just not very good. So it could be difficult for Marino, or for Tebow. Although, you know, at least goal line wise, you know he's the guy they're going to hand the ball to at the goal line. I'm hoping that Tebow is good because I want that 8-8 prediction I had with Nagler. I want that to turn out to be true. But hopefully you're not hearing my computer in the background, which is just whining loudly. I don't know what the heck is going on with it. I apologize in advance if it is getting on your nerves. I'm not sure if you could hear it or not. It sounds like my fan's about to die, so fantastic. If you want to donate me a new computer, drop me an email at thunderingblurb@gmail.com. We're going to move on. So we were talking about McGahee being hurt, possibly be going for 2 to 3 weeks. We've lost a few other people, of course. Some people hit the injured reserve. Tim Hightower with the Redskins got hurt this past weekend. Tore his ACL. Chris Cooley is now on injured reserve as well. That was a knee injury issue. So, fantasy people, you can bump Fred Davis there. Although Davis has been doing very well. And the Colts shut down Kerry Collins. I thought they had already done that, but apparently they hadn't. Beyond that, you look, and we've got Darren McFadden with an ankle injury, Matt Ryan with an ankle injury, you've got Sam Bradford fighting a high ankle sprain, you've got Javid Best out with a concussion. We have a ton of guys who are down and out right now, banged up. And, you know, that's how that happens throughout the football season. Now, I bring the injuries up in part because we're going to talk some injuries, but also because One thing that has come up the last few weeks is the lack of hitting practices throughout the season. You basically get a handful of them. It used to be, I don't know what the total was, but I think they're kind of near, not daily, but several times a week that teams could have the pads on and hit. That's not the case right now. There has been some talk that perhaps this lack of hitting, this lack of full pads practice is maybe putting guys in a position to get hurt. All right, let's first talk about the fact that there are padless practices. The theory is that people get hurt when they're in pads, which is true because that's football. But for every concussion or broken arm that happens in a practice, and they do happen, and have been happening for years, and will continue to happen. I mean, last year, the Jets lost Jim Leonard right before they got blown out by the Pats. You get concussions sometimes. You get a lot of stuff. Freaky stuff happens. But will this really have a long-term effect on players? Will they not wear down as much later in the season? Or, on the contrary side of things, is the lack of pads putting guys in a position to potentially get hurt more? Now, tackling is a big bugaboo for me. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that I will go off on a tackling rant every once in a while throughout the season. I've been a little quiet this season because I've been busy during most of the games, but quite often I will sit there and you'll have a series of tweets that go sort of like, oh my god, that was the worst tackle I've ever seen. Try wrapping him up. Don't just hit him. I mean, it's a conversation I actually have with my kid before he goes to play his peewee football games. I'll show him. I'll say, look at that guy. He ran into him and fell down. There was, in fact, a play this weekend where his team's defense just didn't wrap guys up. They weren't wrapping guys up in the backfield. So the opposing running back was able to get some extra yards, gets hit in the backfield, and then it looks like he breaks a tackle and he goes another 5 yards when he should have been down 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. I think that for sure the lack of pad practices hurts that. But tackling has been an issue in the league for years and will continue to be so. In part, and if I can get on my little soapbox here right now, in part because that's what we've sold the game on. Hey, listen, back when the NBA was just, you know, at its height, or right before its height, there was this guy, don't know if you've heard of him, his name was Michael Jordan. Well, Michael Jordan, for those of you too young to have actually seen it happen, when he was really just exploding on the scene, he had these just crazy dunks, and he would do these fantastic moves and these amazing, just, you know, rim shattering, flying high. I mean, Air Jordan. I mean, that's where it came from. ESPN used to play the hell out of those. And you know what? After a while, years later, you started to see more and more guys coming up who didn't seem to be able to make a free throw or a jump shot. Guys whose skills were mostly slam dunking. Hey, the best example was Baby Jordan, Harold Miner, went to USC when I did. Miner left, played with the Heat. Dude couldn't stop anyone, had no defensive skills whatsoever. Could dunk the hell out of the ball, but that's not going to get you very far in the NBA. But to me, the NBA took a step backwards skill-wise because the basic skills were not what people wanted to see. If you wanted to be on SportsCenter, good passing didn't get you there, which then could affect your contracts, could affect your, or would affect your endorsement deals. You want to be making the big money like Mike Jordan? Then you need to get on SportsCenter in order to do that. You need to be in a highlight, and 9 times out of 10, that was a slam dunk. It's changed a little bit. ESPN does do the highlights differently now. But they're not that much. And we may never see another NBA highlight at this point. We can talk about, at this point, the NBA labor kerfuffle makes the NFL's labor issues this summer look like a tea party between friends. I mean, it's just not good. But so let me bring it back to football here for a minute. And that will be the only NBA talk we ever do on this show. Bringing it back to football, you know, guys want to be on SportsCenter or guys want to make an impact. It's hitting a guy. You know, the ESPN was all, oh, concussions, concussions. Well, you know what? You guys had a sequence called Jacked Up. You know, for years, you would show guys just get just devastated with hits. Just laid out. You can't do that and then go, oh, I don't know why they're getting concussions. Well, they're getting concussions because guys are leading with their head. Because that's how you got on Jacked Up. That's how you got on SportsCenter. That's how you got on NFL Primetime. It's still how you get on NFL Primetime if you're a defensive player. You lay the wood on someone. And we all pull our hair out and we get so upset and so worried because these guys, concussions and, oh my God, the quality of life. Nobody gives a crap. Listen, I do care because I know a bunch of players. But ultimately, Joe Fan, and I don't mean this to denigrate anyone, but they don't care. They don't see the long-term effects. They're not going to. And we've been conditioned at this point to love the big hit. I know the effects and I love to see a big hit sometimes. Holy cow, watching the Pee Wee game this weekend, there was a hell of a block. It was a kick return touchdown, actually. And the kick return touchdown was sprung by one block, which is a lot of the time how that happens. But you could hear it across the field. Nobody was hurt. They were fine. I mean, they're kids. They can't really hit each other that hard. But you could hear it. And the whole side went, oh, wow, what a hit. Because that's what we watch football for, the collisions. I mean, we also watch for the fantastic passing, the great catches, all of that stuff. But ESPN and NFL Network and every highlight show everywhere, at this point, that's one of their mainstays, and they have been doing it for years, and we are wrapped up into it. Now, back to the topic about the denigration, or the denigration, the degradation, the degrading of the skill of tackling. Kids are going through high school and college, and A, not being properly taught how to tackle, to be absolutely honest. There's a lot of guys who are not being taught how to wrap a guy up, but even if they are, there's a fair amount of the big guys, you know, who lay those hits on there, who know damn well that that's how you get noticed. I mean, how many college football players are there in D1? Thousands? How do you stand out? Stand out by ringing someone's bell every once in a while. You can make great plays, you can do a lot of stuff, you can stand out that way. I'm not saying it's even a conscious thing. I am saying that we could talk about hitting all we want, but it's what we all like to watch. Now, I kind of got off topic at this point, so let me bring it back to where we originally started, which is the non-pad practices. That's the other way the tackling is going to go to the dogs. There's only one way to get good at tackling, and that's tackling. Like, you can have someone tell you the theory, you can have someone explain it to you, but a lot of things about football you have to do. You just have to learn by doing. You know, when my son's out there playing defensive line, and he's got a bigger guy who's holding him a little bit, the only way I can tell him how to break, so, you know, someone's arms on him, how to knock their hands away and get around them. I can tell them all day. I can show them footage. I can draw plays. His coaches can do all of that. The only way he's going to learn how to do it is by doing it. So if the no-hitting practices do anything, it's going to make tackling worse in the league. Now, that can lead to injury. Bad tackling, still going for the big hit. That can all lead to injury. But ultimately, I don't really think the non-hitting practices are going to do that much for a lot of the players. The wear and tear happens mostly on Sunday. The teams are pretty good about saying, you know what, we're going to let you sit Wednesday. I mean, Calvin Johnson never practices on Wednesdays. That's because the Detroit Lions want to keep him healthy. The most damage is done on a Sunday. And until they deal with the equipment issues, until they deal with other issues around concussions and injuries, those injuries are going to continue. Guys are still going to finish the game, retire, and have the same issues they've had before. It's another example of trying to aim for this little piece of something that, you know, it's the small fix instead of the big issue fix. Better equipment, better helmets, mouth guards, simple things that could improve the player's chances of having a good post-career life. So I don't think that the no-hitting practices are a horrible thing. I just don't think that they really do much of anything. Like I said, it's possible that it's going to make the tackling a little bit worse. But ultimately, I don't think it's going to prevent injuries, and I don't think it's going to appreciably increase injuries. These injuries that we're seeing, a lot of them are very freaky. Cooley's injury had been sitting around on him for quite a while. I think some of the injuries early on in the season were more, you know, preseason light, no off-season injuries maybe. But at this point, now we're just seeing guys who are getting hurt, as it happens every single year. We just mentioned post-career life. There's one guy who is not ready to embrace that right now, and that would be Terrell Owens, who today held a practice in beautiful California, a tryout, a skills competition, as it were, for scouts, of which no team went. Maybe there was someone hidden in the stands somewhere, but no teams. Lots of media. NFL Network was there. Friend Jake Stevens, who works for an ESPN affiliate out in Bakersfield, California for a while. He was there. Lots of people there. No scouts. And by all accounts, he looked okay. Not great. This is where Terrell Owens is. I mean, and nobody was calling beforehand, as much as Drew Rosenhaus has said otherwise. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, we talked about the Titans missing out on Lloyd, could end up with the Titans. I don't know that they'll take that risk. But he could end up on the Titans. They got burned with the whole Randy Moss thing. Perhaps they're gun shy. But I know a lot of people who are, or I don't want to say apologists for Owens, because I don't think he needs an apologist. There are people who are still very big believers in him. I just didn't really love what I saw in Cincinnati. I thought he did well, but not fantastic. Not really sure how much he'd bring to the Titans. I'm sure he'd, you know, probably pull some of the defense off of guys like Damian Williams when he's healthy and Nate Washington. It certainly couldn't hurt the offense at this point that they have for Tennessee. And at this point, if no teams are really talking to T.O. that we're aware of and nobody showed up to his little competition, man, how far off the radar is Randy Moss? When's the last time you heard his name, by the way? Not a long time. Terrell Owens is the type of guy, to me, who might have something left in the tank, but to watch Randy Moss last year was to watch a guy who was gassed. And not only gassed, but seemed to have lost interest. I think Owens wants to play. I think he can play. I think he can play well. I think he's probably going to get a shot sometime in the next week or two. Somebody will give him an opportunity to play. I think he'll be a decent starter for some team. I don't think he's going to be anything special anymore. His best years are behind him. So there's the answer to the question. If a TO falls in the forest and no scouts are around to hear him, does he make a sound? The answer is no. Drew Rosenhaus makes the sound for him. All right, let's move on to some picks here. I haven't really been tracking these very well. I do know that I started off very rough. I think I've done pretty well the last couple weeks. I should probably keep track of this so I could mock myself, but let's save that for next year. How's that? We'll take more careful, you know, track of what I've been doing, but I'm doing all right. I mean, one survivor pool where myself and another gentleman have entered that has a nice pretend cash prize, since I don't want anyone in trouble. But we're in the top 240 right now. Out of the Giants a couple weeks ago took out the majority of the people in the pool. So we're gonna do. I feel like I've been doing pretty well with the picks, and yeah, I did. I don't think I picked the Broncos this past weekend. I don't remember. I kind of need to pick the Broncos every week to make my eat and eat. Otherwise, I'm going to be buying Nagler dinner. So anyway, without any further ado, because that was enough ado, let us talk some Week 8 picks. Let's start with two teams that lost ugly this past weekend. One of them will likely repeat that this coming weekend as the Colts go to visit the Titans. I'm sorry, Colts. It's really quite simple. You're not very good. I believe the Colts are going to end up 0-8 after visiting the Titans, who I think will bounce back pretty well. I think Chris Johnson will have a good game for once. Matt Hasselbeck will get back to where he was, play pretty well. I just don't see the Colts really being able to overcome the Titans as bad as the Titans might be. The Titans' early victory is kind of an illusion, really. But they'll win this one, and they'll go to 3-1, 3-1 at home, and the Colts will be still searching for their first victory. Still searching for their first victory. That's a theme. That's a theme for the Saints and Rams. The Saints 5-2 meet the St. Louis Rams on the Rams' home turf, but unfortunately, I think it's going to be 0-7 time for the Rams. You know, the Breeze-led Saints have been a little hot and cold on occasion. Not this week. I fully expect the New Orleans Saints to run away with this one, although I don't think 67 points will repeat. Sam Bradford's playing with that high ankle sprain. Expect Brandon Lloyd to be a little more involved, but overall, yeah, this is a team that's not going to be able to keep up with a team like the Saints. Continuing the Ofer conversation, the Dolphins head to the Meadowlands to play not the Jets, but the Giants. It's a bad time to me, the Dolphins, as they just lost the Tebow in grand fashion, and the Giants are coming off a bye week. Expect heavy Ahmad Bradshaw, lots of Akeem Nicks, and a sprinkling of Brandon Jacobs. There's just nothing good about this Dolphins team. I cannot imagine that the Giants are going to lose this game. I think the Giants run away with it, in fact. It's going to be a very, very long day for guys like Matt Moore and Brandon Marshall. Moving on, the Vikings meet the Panthers. Carolina Panthers 2-2 at home. The Vikings have not won on the road yet. Christian Ponder makes this game a little bit more interesting. If this were McNabb, I think the Vikings wouldn't have a chance. Well, there's always a chance they have Adrian Peterson, who's, you know, sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks will crack 1,000 yards already. On the other hand, the Panthers have one Cam Newton. Steve Smith also playing out of his mind. They don't run the ball very much right now, so it's going to be hard for them to keep Peterson off the field. Ponder also looked pretty good last week, but I think Cam Newton's really going to be too much for the Vikings. I think they'll get after him, but I think Newton's just been playing at too high a level, and the Vikings have just overall struggled. So I'm calling this a Carolina Panther victory, sending the Vikings home 1-7. The Cardinals head to the Ravens. The Ravens embarrassed on Monday Night Football. Joe Flacco looked absolutely devastatingly horrific. If I could come up with more adjectives, I would, to describe how bad he looked. Speaking of looking bad, Kevin Cobb, not looking very good right now. Beanie Wells is hurt. Poor Larry Fitzgerald. You know, the Cardinals could make a run at this NFC West still. It's not going to start this weekend. Expect the Ravens to come out fired up and the defense to prove a point that they can win a game when they need to. The defense played well this past weekend, but I think they're going to come out really fired up and they're going to strangle the Cardinals and make sure that even a Joe Flacco who had like 8 yards and a half can't possibly lose this game. Be interesting to see that theory tested, but I believe the Ravens will win this at home, continue undefeated at home, but raise their general overall record to 5-2. The Jags head to Houston to meet the Houston Texans. The Texans are starting to get a little bit healthy. Andre Johnson may be back, but probably not for another week or so. Jacksonville coming off a surprising win, a little boring win over the Ravens, but a win is a win is a win. Blaine Gabbert starting to come together as a quarterback, still has a long way to go. Doesn't have a lot of weapons to work with, and Jones-Drew was just shut down basically by the Ravens for most of the game. Expect the Texans to do the same. This is a runaway if Johnson happens to play, but if not, you're going to get a lot of Arian Foster, and you're going to get yourself a lot of Owen Daniels, and the Jaguars just do not have an answer for that. Expect the Texans to continue to build their lead in the AFC South. In the afternoon games kick off with the Bills and the Redskins. Bills coming off of a bye with some questions about whether or not this team is for real or if they were posers. Meanwhile, the Redskins have been a bit up and down lately. As I said earlier in the show, lost Hightower, lost Cooley, but you still got Fred Davis, you still got Jabbar Gaffney, and oh, by the way, Santana Moss, we didn't talk about this because he didn't go on the IR, but Santana Moss is gone for like a month and a half. So I thought this could be a close game until all that happened. The Redskins' defense is pretty good, but John Beck's not. The Bills have a very opportunistic defense. They're not going to continue to play at the level they were, but they're going to be very good. And this offense, people are still underrating it. This is going to be the Bills at home winning. Not going to be a laugher, but I think they're going to run away with this one by halftime. Lions-Broncos. Broncos coming off of not an impressive win against the Miami Dolphins, but it was a win nonetheless. Unfortunately for my 8-8 prediction, the Lions are going to come in and probably whoop the crap out of them. Matt Stafford may not play, but Sean Hill's done very well when Stafford hasn't been able to play, which was a pretty frequent thing over the last couple of years. Javid Best may not play, but that's fine. I think a combination of Maurice Morris and Keelan Williams will be good enough. And Calvin Johnson alone might be able to beat the Broncos. He might be able to play the entire offense. So unfortunately for the Donkeys, I don't see them coming out on top. I don't see a Miracle Tebow comeback. And so our conversation next week will center on why Tebow sucks rather than why he's awesome. You know what? The fact of the matter is that Tebow is going to be developing for a while. He isn't great. He isn't bad. He's still learning. But he's going to learn you don't beat the Dolphins, or the Dolphins. He's going to learn that you don't struggle to beat the Dolphins and then actually take one away from the Lions, who, you know, again, a team that was undefeated and now is being questioned as to whether they were a pretender or contender. They'll start getting back on the good foot with a victory over the Broncos in Denver. Patriots-Steelers, this is going to be a tough one to call. Everybody's healthy pretty much on both sides of the ball. The Patriots have been outstanding and played very well on the road. The Steelers have not lost at home. This is going to be a very intriguing matchup. And I don't think I'm picking this because I don't like the Patriots. I think I'm picking this in my heart. I believe Ben Roethlisberger and Rashard Mendenhall, Mike Wallace, are going to have a very good game against a somewhat suspect and aging Patriots defense, which has given up a lot of yards this season so far. The Steelers' D will stand up, and it's going to be the difference of stopping Brady once, which I think they can really do, so I'm picking the Steelers here against the Patriots. 49ers-Browns. 49ers very close to locking up that NFC West at this point. Going up, Colt McCoy. Peyton Hillis may not play. Colt McCoy has been playing well. Not fantastic, but pretty well. Alex Smith is no great shakes either, but Frank Gore is a tremendous running back, and this is a team that Jim Harbaugh, the head coach, has just playing so far above themselves right now. I don't think the Browns are going to be able to keep up with the Niners. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game, but I think defensively the Niners are so much better than the Browns are right now that the Niners will be able to hold the Browns down, keep Colt McCoy and Hillis and Montario Hardesty in check. At the end of the day, the Niners are going to go home or stay home a winner and end up at 6-1, one step closer to the NFC West title. Bengals-Seahawks. Bengals coming off a bye, visiting Seattle. Tarvis Jackson may be back, might not be back. Marshawn Lynch is probably going to be gone. I don't like anything about the Seahawks right now. And the Bengals, I'm not a big Andy Dalton believer still. But this is a team that has found ways to win and has been playing pretty good football, and that defense is outstanding. I think Seattle's in a lot of trouble. Cincinnati over Seattle in this one. Sunday Night Football, Cowboys-Eagles should have been a better game. Should have been a better game is not a better game, sadly. The Eagles, what can you say about the Eagles that hasn't been said? Mike Vick's not going to win this game by himself. Have they fixed things while they're on their bye week? Have they been able to come together as a group? I don't really know. Meanwhile, the Cowboys, yeah, they play good, they play bad, they're all over the place. This is another toss-up. DeMarco Murray's probably going to have a pretty big day against the Eagles' soft middle of the defense. And if Romo can just avoid the big mistake, I know, not easy to say or do, I think Dallas is going to come away with a victory here. Excuse me. Michael Vick should be able to stay upright in this game. LeSean McCoy will probably do fine, but I just don't think that this is an Eagles team that's going to be able to win this game. I think the Cowboys come out on top Sunday night. You've got the Chargers and the Chiefs. The Chiefs, who surprisingly, after sucking terribly, have kind of turned things around. And a Chargers team that collapsed against the Jets this past weekend. I love the Chargers. They got good running backs. They got a fantastic quarterback. But I'll tell you what, going into Kansas City at home, this is a team that looked like they just were coached out of it and just didn't play well, you know, against the Jets. I don't think that the Chiefs are a great team by any stretch. I think they're a good enough team to win at home, though. Monday Night Football, I'm calling the Chiefs as my upset of the week over the Chargers on Monday Night Football. I'm sure you'll hear many, many Gruden superlatives during that game, which is why I like to listen to Westwood One. All right, so that is it for my picks. A couple quick stories that I didn't get to earlier that I want to touch on now. I talked about how disastrous the Dolphins are. We're already talking about whether Sperato is going to be replaced. He hasn't been fired yet. The two names that are being talked about most would be, of course, John Gruden, as well as Bill Cowher. Now, Gruden just signed a 5-year ESPN contract, so you may be asking yourself, I mean, if you say that out loud, I'm a little concerned for your sanity, but that's all right. I'm not saying either. But you might say self. Looking at this right now, why would Gruden leave ESPN? He's making a lot of money. Gruden is going to coach again at some point. He's not going to finish that 5-year contract. But I don't think he goes this year or next. I think he's there for a little while further. Now, Bill Cowher has been interested in coming back, but he's been waiting for the right spot. The right spot being a coaching gig that also allows him to be GM. As Bill Parcells famously put it, if I'm going to cook, you might as well let me buy some of the groceries. The thing is I just still feel like this Miami Dolphins franchise is kind of a mess. So I don't think this is the right spot for Bill Cowher. I think he waits for a better situation. Now, it's not going to be a perfect situation, because if they're firing their coach, then they're struggling on some way, shape, or form. But I think he's going to wait. Now, of course, Stephen Ross can want Cowher and Gruden and guys like Tony Dungy all he wants, but, like, it doesn't matter. The Dolphins don't find a way to make it look like they're a good franchise. Guess what, kids? You're not going to get the best coach. So it'll be interesting. I don't think either of those really end up happening, which leaves you with a question of who would end up getting that job. Because right now, Ross and the ownership group, the only people they're talking about are guys like Cowher and Gruden. Once again, if you suck, I don't know that you're going to get Cowher and Gruden. Not when they've got cushy gigs where they are and they can pick and choose their spots. So that's going to do it. I guess I didn't have a second late story, but that's all right. It's going to do it for this edition of The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. Of course, you are listening to this on the Cheesehead radio feed on iTunes, or maybe you downloaded it at cheeseheadtv.com. That is where I hang my hat for NFL coverage throughout the week. You can always catch my fantasy football takes at footballguys.com, including this week's edition of the Fantasy Triage article, which tells you who's been hurt, how bad I think they are, how concerned you should be, and who you might grab in their stead. And of course, you can always catch all of the stuff that I do over there at footballguys.com, roundtables, Q&As, whatever they ask me to do. I am a slave to Joe and David and will do it. So much so, I cut my pumpkin to look like Black Eyed Joe symbol. And of course, you can catch my stuff. I'll be ramping up a Bleacher Report again sometime in the next couple weeks. We'll see how that works out. I'll keep you guys posted, and I'm always on Twitter way too much. If you just follow me at Andrew_Garda, G-A-R-D-A, and you'll hear me rant about tackles later on. That's going to do it. Thanks for listening. Without you guys, I'm just talking into the ether, which means I'd probably be talking, but people would think I would be insane rather than talking to you. You guys are the reason that we have this site. You guys are the reason that we are out here allowed to talk football and actually, have someone talk back to us. So, if you want to talk back to us, you can always email me at thunderingblurb@gmail.com, as well as hit me up on Twitter. That's pretty much it. I want to thank Aaron and Corey for hosting this little shindig, and I want to thank you guys for listening. Hope you have a great weekend, and I will see you on the flip side next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Don't forget, guys, stay classy.
You've been listening to The Hard Count with Aaron Nagler and Andrew Garda.
Let's go again!
Word!